You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
It is 9:08. Yep, over to Bob Dylan, a legend, of course, in music. We're going to go from a legend to a legend because we're going to go to Jimmy Kays, of course, noted rugby writer in days gone by, and these days producer of The Breakdown. He's also a rugby commentator and analyst, and he's the talent boss at Sky Television as well. Jimmy, been a long time. Good morning to you, and thanks for your time this morning.
Morning, Smitty. What an intro, because in the same sentence as Bob Dylan. Holy moly.
I was looking around for lyrics, and I just something hit me in the head and said, the times they are a change. I don't know if they are, but we get a feeling that it isn't. And because they're both Sky products, Sky would be delighted anyway with the rugby and the interest in the Warriors.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the Warriors is fascinating, and someone will eventually, I guess, do some sort of a bit of research into it, because it's just so organic. The support, the groundswell, and you know, the singing in the stadiums, and people go there really now as much for the to be there as to watch the game, if that kind of makes sense. You know, like, you could obviously watch the game at home, but people really want to be there, and I think that's hard to generate in an artificial sense, and it's so organic, and it's just. It's wonderful. It's wonderful to see. It's great to see such a popular team in Auckland.
It is. It's absolutely flying at the moment. There's no doubt about it. You mentioned organic. There's a certain bit of organic too about going to Fiji and playing the Fijian Drua at the moment. That's what the Hurricanes have to do tonight, mate. 7:05, yeah. But at least it's a night game. It's not in Lautoka and it is in Suva. So that might just help them a little bit more.
Yeah, look, it might do. They've left a couple of their big names out of the squad, and particularly out of the 15. But yes, I think anyone who follows Super Rugby now knows they're going to Fiji to play the Drua is a heck of a challenge. It can be very hot and very humid, very wet. And big teams, let's keep calling them a big team at the moment, the Crusaders, they've fallen over there a couple of times. And it'll be a fascinating game. Hurricanes, as we all know, unbeaten, riding high. Isn't it interesting, though, what they've tried to do this week? They've had meetings in saunas and tried to train in saunas and those sorts of things as well, just to get used to the heat. Intriguing. And you know, good on them. I think it's great that they're trying these different things. But this will be – it's a fascinating round, actually, all of the games. And this will be a really, really interesting game. I remember – Smithy, you remember a guy, Daryl Lilly, played fullback for the Hurricanes and also for the Crusaders, and he told me that one time the Crusaders played the Reds in Brisbane, and the Reds put the game on at like 2:30 in the afternoon, thinking the heat would undo the Crusaders. And Daryl Lilly told me, he said, I made the mistake at halftime of lying down on the dressing room floor, and I literally couldn't get up, and they poured a bucket of cold water over me to sort of revive me. It was that hot. So, interesting. Crusaders... Some of them thought they were going to have to go to hospital after playing there the last time. So, yeah, it'll be interesting. I mean, you love a flutter. Which way would you go on this?
Look, I don't know, actually. It's probably a game I'd stay away from. The reason why, I think if the Hurricanes can get in front, I don't think the Drua are as good as playing catch-up as they are protecting a lead in front of their fans. So if the Hurricanes are chasing the game, I'm not sure they're going to chase that well. They have no Omoa tonight. How good has he been, and what kind of statement has he been making going forward for perhaps Scott Robertson or myself or Omoa?
Oh, absolutely superb. And you know, within that forward pack, you'd add Braden Yuossi as well, and also Peter Lakai. You know, I think that there's some really, really good talent in that Hurricanes forward pack, and Tyrell Lomax anchoring the scrum as well. But Asafa Omoa is one of those guys. Was he brought in a bit too early? Maybe he was brought into the All Blacks environment a bit too early, and then he sort of went backwards a bit after that. But he's regathered himself. He's showing all of the wonderful skills that we saw when he first burst onto the scene. And who on earth would want to tackle him out wide? You know, he's so strong, so quick. He's got the skills of a second five. You know, he's sort of Dane Coles on steroids, isn't he? Yeah, wonderful. And you know, I think it would be impossible to leave him out of the All Blacks.
I would have thought so. There'll be other All Black candidates on show tonight too, against the Reds out of the Highlanders camp. One might be Billy Harmon. I noticed Falau Fokitava's not starting tonight. They've got James Ascott in the 9 jersey pairing up with Cameron Miller. Now, this is going to be a tough one because the Reds are battling. The Reds are at home. They've been pretty average for a side that was quite highly rated going into this, but they have to live tonight without what Tate McDermott and Fraser McRae.
Yeah, the judiciary playing its hand there. Again, it's quite an intriguing game, as you allude to, because the Highlanders, they're sitting 10th. 10th versus 6th, normally you wouldn't get too excited about that. But with the top 8, it's another opportunity for the Highlanders, who have been here or thereabouts. But the Highlanders have always reminded me, Smithy, we've all seen this. You know, the first 15 that comes from a small school, and they've got a really good 15, but they just don't have the backups. And you just get the sense that, you know, one or two injuries, one or two drops in form, like Patchell, you know, was there at the start and then dropped, played club rugby last week. So you just get the sense that they don't quite have, well, not even the sense, they don't have the depth to really sustain good form throughout the competition. And as you say, the Reds, you know, they were the team that everyone was talking up this year. This will be, what time is this? This is a night game. That'll be all right. It's a night game in Brisbane. It will have been cooling down quite a bit since by then. So, yeah, I'd probably lean towards the home team, unless, as you sort of suggested for in Fiji, if the Highlanders can get away to a flyer, they might be able to hold on to it.
They might. The Blues and the Brumbies. Now, the Blues sitting right up there, just underneath the Hurricanes, have only been beaten by the Hurricanes. They're 9 in a row at Eden Park. They're starting to build a bit of a bastion there against the Brumby side again, who perennially we say are going to be there or thereabouts. And they might have just found a formula. They're on a bit of a roll. They've won their last 5.
Yeah, so this is 2 versus 3. A fascinating game. Really, really looking forward to it because it's perhaps a little bit unfair on the Blues, but you know, each week I think, right, this is another sort of litmus test for them. Are they still the flaky Blues, or has Stern Vern Cotter turned them into a more consistent mob? I get the feeling he has, and this will be a real test of that, because at home, but against the best Australian team at the moment, you would expect the Blues to win. Really good examination, I think, of their forward pack, and that's where they're going to win this competition. They've really bashed other teams into submission. They're using the forward pack as a bit of a sledgehammer, and then going wide. And Vern Cotter's done a great job of bringing some consistency into this team, some much needed consistency. We know they can do the flash stuff. We know they can play well out wide. We've got amazing backs in Ioane and Mark Talia and et cetera, et cetera. But they just haven't had that consistency, and some of their players haven't had that consistency. Guys like Patrick Tuipulotu, who's a wonderful player when he's in form, but has lacked that consistency as well. I'd say the same about Dalton Papali'i, and certainly within the Blues environment, Offa Tungafasi as well. So really good examination of them tonight. I think the Blues should win this one, Smithy. I think they should win it, and they should win it going away from them toward the end. But, you know, they're going to have to work hard for it, they're going to have to really be on their game.
I agree with you too about the likes of Papali'i. Now, if you look at that loose forward trio, which is starting again tomorrow, Kira Ioane, Hoskins Satutu, Dalton Papali'i, they've been around long enough now, they should be an absolute standout in this competition. But are they?
Not yet. And I think consistency is the reason why. You know, Kira Ioane, we all know, great talent, wonderful skills, big human being, plenty of pace, et cetera, et cetera. But he's been really inconsistent. He's been up and down, picked, dropped. Steve Hansen tried to turn him into, you know, into an All Black, a consistent All Black. That didn't happen. And I think the same for Hoskins Satutu. Again, a wonderful player with the ball in hand, but just hasn't been able to match it with game after game after game. And if you look at the truly great players, the Kanos, the McCaws, those sorts of people, Sam Kane, you know, they've just produced the same performance, the same extremely high performance every week. And that hasn't been the case for that loose forward trio at the Blues, and it hasn't really been the case for the forward pack at the Blues for a long time. But it does seem to be creeping into their game this year. Consistency seems to be creeping into their game. So, you know, if they want to be All Blacks with a new coach, with a fresh start, who's not looking at any guys that he's had in an All Black team before because it's fresh, then they need to produce week after week after week. And I think we're starting to see a little bit of that.
Well, Jimmy, who'd have thought that at this stage of a Super Rugby competition,
yeah.
We would be talking about a cellar dweller match involving the Crusaders and the Force, 9:35 tomorrow night in Perth. This is quite unbelievable. The Force are 2-34 against New Zealand teams. These two sides are, the Crusaders, for instance, they average 175 tackles on average per 80 minutes, and these two sides put together the fewest phases per possession. Boy, what a story that tells about the Crusaders.
It's phenomenal, isn't it? It really is phenomenal. I mean, you're right, cellar dwellers, I just sent a cheeky message to our breakdown team about how it was the battle for the wooden spoon. I sort of giggled because I grew up in Auckland and I'm a Blues and Auckland supporter. So, you know, we do love to hate the Crusaders. And also I think, you know, let's be honest, the demise of the Crusaders this year is in stark contrast to that incredible franchise dynasty that was set up over the last 10, 15 sort of years, you know, and finished off by Scott Robertson. So that's why we sort of chuckle, because of that consistent success that they've had for so long. But Smithy, I can't tell you who's going to win this game. In Perth, I can't tell you who's going to win it. If this was in Christchurch, I'd go really confidently, even though they've been pretty average this year with the Crusaders. But over there in Perth, travel, home advantage, all those sorts of things, you've got to say the Force are in with a reasonable shout in this game.
I do. I mean, you look at the experience starting in the front row. Moody and Owen Franks, incredible. Moody and Owen Franks starting in there. I was going to ask you. I should have gone back to you and asked about the loose forward makeup for the All Blacks as well, because we've touched on it. Billy Harmon making massive statements this year. Tom Christie is doing his best to lead from the front. Ethan Blackadder back in the fold, and then you've got those exciting, as you mentioned, Hurricanes loose forwards. I mean, that would be one of the areas I would think Scott Robertson, being a former loose forward, be really sitting forward in his seat about.
Oh, absolutely, because add into that two guys who are coming back, Sam Kane, who seems to have an injury, and we're not sure really what's happening there, and would he be the sort of player that Scott Robertson would look to, and obviously Artie Savea, World Player of the Year, to come back as well. But I think, if you look at loose forwards, it is still one area where New Zealand is consistently producing high-quality players. And those names that you listed are all really within a shout of making an All Blacks team. I really hope, Smithy, that Braden Nyosa is in there somewhere, because we haven't seen a number eight with his size and pace for... Well, really, Kieran Reid was the guy that had his size and his pace. Kieran Reid was incredibly quick. I just love it when he comes off the back of that Hurricane scrum and gets past the defenders and then has all sorts of options. So, yeah, Peter Larkin as well seems to play all three positions. Not sure which one is his best. It's probably not open side, but he's doing a great job there as well. Exciting, isn't it? And what better coach to have, what better person to be selecting than someone who played 22 tests for the All Blacks in Scott Robertson.
I feel
excited about the All Blacks. You know, I think he'll bring in such a breath of fresh air. We had such sustained success for so long under Graeme Henry and Steve Hansen, and to a degree under Ian Foster as well. I mean, did take them to a World Cup final after all. So it'll be really interesting to see how Scott Robertson reimagines this All Black side and what style they play with and how much is entertainment, how much is hard graft, how much is you know, all of those sorts of things, because it's not easy coming up against England in your first two test matches. So he's got a tough start.
He has a really tough introduction, I think it's fair to say. In fact, I'm so looking forward to those two test matches, because if England do bring a full squad, and the squad that was playing pretty well at the end of the Six Nations, it is going to be tough. You're absolutely right about that, Jimmy. A couple of other domestic matters to ask sure. you about. Are you happy? I mean, what's the feeling of the group? The ball in play, the pace of the game, are we happier with the start to Super Rugby?
I think we are. And I think all three elements involved need to be congratulated. The coaches are obviously coaching slightly differently, and the players are responding to it. And I think the players are doing better at not giving away as many stupid penalties. And I think we should really applaud the refereeing. You know, some of the games that have been played over the last couple of weeks in particular, well, actually all throughout the season, some of them have been, we've seen some fantastic rugby. Not always in front of big crowds, let's be honest about that. But the rugby has been extremely good. And as I say, I think the referees deserve a real pat on the back for that, and perhaps the coaching as well, because ultimately you can coach players to do whatever you want. You know, people talk about the head highs and that sort of stuff. Coaches coached players to tackle higher. They can coach them again to come down. And one example I think where we're seeing that is what used to be those stupid challenges in the air where two players went up for the ball. Now we're seeing one person stay on the ground, let the person catch it, and then attack them when they land on the ground. So I think we're seeing in some of those areas where there's been dumb penalties, dumb yellow cards, we're seeing a bit more common sense, and that's wonderful, and I think it's flowing into the game.
In terms of the governance of the game, now we've had this week, we've had a representative of the provincial unions, and he was pretty adamant that they're not that close actually to getting this sorted in terms of the governments, in terms of the makeup of the board and those sorts of things, and even picking the people who are going to be picking the makeup of the board. It seems quite a long way away, Jimmy. How have you seen it from your perspective?
Shambolic. You know, let's be honest. I mean, you know, they came up with the Pilkington report last year. What are we now? We're you know, halfway through April. I mean, they can't, you wouldn't want these guys organising a party, would you? Because they wouldn't be very good at it. Too much vested interest, too much selfishness, and too many people wanting to protect their patch rather than looking at the wider game and saying what's good for the game. You know, just as an example, there are some provincial unions that for me are too focused on high performance rather than fostering the game. We know that the number of people playing the game is dwindling. Particularly for men, for males. For girls and women, it's increasing, but for boys and men, it's decreasing. I think some of those provinces need to stop worrying about the high-performance side of it and focus more on fostering the game, on getting kids out there to play, on perhaps moving their competitions away from just Saturdays and playing during the week like lots of other sports do, just being a little bit more inventive so that there's opportunities for people to play. And that's just one example, mate. So I think when you look at the governance, I think it's been shambolic, and I think it's riddled with self-interest. And when you're riddled with self-interest, it's very hard to get, you know, the best decision. And I'd say that for all three parties, you know, the provincial unions, the Players Association, and New Zealand Rugby, they all seem to be fighting for their own little empires, and that's not good for the game.
It's dreadful for the game because it just at the moment, you know, it appears directionless. Now, what kind of person is the right kind of person? I think they have nine. They're going to have nine. What kind of people, what kind of representation do you need? I mean, how much do you have to pay attention to the grassroots level, the future, Jimmy? In 5 to 10 years, what will it look like?
That's a really good question, and it's a worrying one, isn't it? Because as we know, as I said earlier, the numbers are heading in the wrong direction for boys and men who play the game. Look, I think you need to have a combination on there of people who have got, you know, the smart business-wise, because there is a huge professional element to the game. But we also need to accept that within the game, if you look at it as a pyramid, you've still got to look after the base. But Smithy, you and I both know, as does anyone who's been around this game know, there are plenty of people who have got both rugby nous and business nous. Mm. But what the game seems to be missing at the moment is a couple of genuine statesmen. Where's the Brian Lahore? Where's the Jock Hobbs of this generation? I don't see those people coming through. That common sense, that pragmatism, and that desire to do what is best for the game. And that, I think, is the biggest concern. That there just doesn't seem, there don't seem to be those incredible statesmen that we've had before that you can look to for common sense and a solution.
See, if I knew that Wayne Smith, for instance, to pluck Wayne Smith out, was on the board of New Zealand Rugby, I'd feel, because of what he's achieved, I would feel quite, I wouldn't say safe about the future of you, but I'd realise that rugby's best interests were being served if I saw a Wayne Smith or a David Kirk perhaps on there.
100%. I mean, Wayne Smith, you know, he could be our Brian Lahore, couldn't he? I mean, you know, the guy has so much integrity. Anyone who knows him knows he's just so honest. He wears his heart on the sleeve. But he has a deep love of rugby. He has an appreciation of rugby through club, through school, all the way up to the top. And I think he'd be a fantastic person to be involved in. I mean, the poor bugger's probably going to need a few more hours in each day because he's doing a lot as it is. But you're right, that's the sort of person. What about a Grant Fox, a very successful businessman who's also been heavily involved in the elite, but also his university club? So those people are there. You know, Steve Hansen, if we could get him to be involved, you know, he rubs some people up the wrong way, but phenomenally successful, came up through the ranks, has a huge element of common sense about him as well. The people are there at the moment, if I said to you, do you want to be involved in New Zealand rugby, you'd probably run a mile. And that's part of the problem, is that they've made the governance of the game unattractive. You'd be looking at it going, I don't want to be involved in this. It's a viper's nest. But actually, it doesn't have to be that way, and it shouldn't be that way, and it's not a constructive way to manage the game. So, you know, they need to change the attitude around it. They need to make it seem a more positive place to be, and bring in some people who would foster building bridges rather than incinerating them.
Brilliant stuff, Jimmy. Absolutely brilliant. We're on the same wavelength there. Got to have rugby people and some financial guys. I'm sure they're dealing in a big business. Don't have a problem there getting the mix, and it appears it's a long way off. It's a damn shame. But however, at some stage it'll sort itself out, we hope. Jimmy Case, absolutely brilliant to give us a half an hour of your time this morning. Really enjoyed the chat, mate. Thank you. Have a great weekend.
You too, mate. Always happy to chat. Thanks, buddy. Take care.